You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hello, and welcome to My Independent Childhood. This week we are talking about eight-legged freaks. So, you know how you always wanted more David Arquette in your life? No? This is awkward. We brought him to you anyway! So, this was kind of an enjoyable romp, guys. I guess spoiler. This movie is light, funny, stupid. Oh god, is it stupid. But it's enjoyable. Anyway, I hope you like it. And since I'm here, I want to thank you. My comedy group, Cineprov, was just voted the best comedy in the city. I guess technically Cineprov was the people's choice for the best comedy show in Atlanta. So thanks for those of you who turned out. Thanks for those of you who voted. People's are always a better choice, especially since I don't think they've sent a reviewer to watch Cineprov in 5 years. Anyway, I will not be on the next show, though on November 1st you should come out and see Halloween 6, because it will be the day after Halloween and you'll all be hungover and you need some giggles. Also, thanks for those who saw me at Monsterama. That show was fantastic. And then, since I will not be on the November show, I will be doing both December shows. So, look to see you then. Thanks, guys.
Welcome to the Soul Forge, a place of silent mystery, quiet contemplation, and outright mayhem. Join your host, Sean Vanderloo, as he guides you through the adventures of living. Together, we'll talk about life and love, sex and dating, joy and heartache, memories and loss, and so much more. Don't worry, it's not nearly as pretentious as it sounds. Get ready for life, the universe, and everything on the Soul Forge.
SoulForgePodcast.com.
Welcome to My Independent Childhood. This week, continuing with Matt's Monster Movie Month, we engage in eight-legged freaks. I guess the ID Software game that no one ever got to play. I guess except for David Arquette. I'm Nick Hoffman, host of My Independent Childhood. On a panel we've got...
Jeremy.
And...
Hello, this is Daniel, and I once fought off a giant fire ant.
Matthew W. Quinn, the aforementioned monster movie master and author of a small town monster novel, The Thing in the Woods.
Well, so it's good to be back. It's actually, you guys have not noticed a difference in regularity, but we haven't been recording for almost a month as I've been getting used to a new job. So it's good to have everyone back around the square table.
Nick sells his body on the streets at night.
Just imagine a lot of neon sights in a neon lights in a montage.
You don't have to wear that dress tonight, Nick. Nicholas, you don't have to put on the red light.
I was going to see how long he was going to do it. But after doing Godzilla, which is a massive budget movie and not good, but it's all on the screen in bad CGI form, we enter a $30 million movie, which I think in its entire domestic run made back $12 million or something.
I saw it in theaters back when it was first
No
released.
Kidding.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, yeah. There was AC in the theater. It was one of those things where my brother and I was somewhere. It's like, okay, what do we want to do? So it's like, well, mom and dad are working. We can walk down to the theater and see what's playing. And by the time you get there, you know, you've already walked through all those back suburban trails. You might as well see something.
Yeah. And I will throw at you, coming out in July 17th for a monster movie tells you exactly what the producers thought of it. That it was not going to be the Halloween release that they wanted it, and so they went for a summer blockbuster. I think we're going to have some interesting mixed opinions on this. Well, we'll get to it, but Matt, as the person who chose this, Do you want to give us a plot synopsis?
Okay, the small town of Prosperity, Arizona is not very prosperous because the mines that sustained it are all circling the drain. The various business schemes the slimy Mayor Wade have come up with aren't really bearing fruit. And so then the son of the late mine owner comes to town and tries to rekindle his romance that probably never actually happened with the sheriff, played by B-movie goddess Carrie Wuer, however I'm pronouncing it.
Yeah, you're fine.
But someone had spilled some toxic waste into the local river, and the little crickets have been eating it, and the local creepy eccentric has been feeding them to his spiders, which are now the size of SUVs, and explicitly says in the back cover, the size of SUVs. So, can they save the town from the badly computer-animated spiders? We'll have to find out.
I just want to say that local creepy town eccentric is Tom Noonan. Show some goddamn respect, sir.
Who's Tom Noonan? Yeah, as you can tell, I'm not nearly as much of a film enthusiast as these people.
He's been, I think, in two movies we've done, at least one. He was in Monster Squad, which we did.
He was RoboCop 2. He was Kane the drug dealer.
He's in Last Action Hero. He's in Manhunter. He was in Anomalisa.
Snooki, New York. Did I pronounce that right?
Say that again.
Synecdoche?
Schenectady.
Schenectady.
Synecdoche.
Synecdoche.
Yeah.
So one of us got it right. I think.
Okay. It wasn't me.
And he was in Frankenstein's Monster and Monster Squad. Yeah, okay, I said that one. He is... I mean, if you give Carrie Werher credit as B-movie royalty, he's kind of that. He's been in... He was in Money Train, which is kind of a stay tuned.
He's amazing, is what he is.
Yeah.
So was Chris Cooper, one of his first roles.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great movie. That's a stupid movie, but a fun movie. I think that, again, it's a stay tuned. Astronaut's Wife. Ugh. Ugh. A movie called They're Made Out of Meat. So there you go.
I want to find out more about that one.
What was that movie he was in where he hires a woman to ostensibly be a babysitter, but it turns out she's supposed to be like a sacrifice to his pagan religion?
What? Is that the biopic?
I want to find out more about that one, too.
I'm looking it up.
Okay, so we start out with a guy who's driving down the road with
we start out with Black Art Bell.
Yes, exactly. Dougie Doug from Cool Runnings, right?
Which one was he?
He was Sanka.
The Rasta?
Yeah, I think so. The guy who was always cold.
Rasta.
Okay.
Yeah, that guy was hilarious.
You know what I recognized him from? He's in the episode of X-Files where he's sending the paper hearts to Scully as a serial killer, Tom Noonan.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
He just has the face for a serial killer. Anyway, sorry, going on.
Well, hence Manhunter.
Yeah, hence Manhunter.
Oh, yeah. He does look like a kind of Frankensteinian version of Christopher Lloyd.
And he did play Frankenstein, so there you go. But yeah, Sanka Coffee, he was also in The Cosby Show. So Dougie Doug is your Art Bell type, he's your Alex Jones type.
I was trying to think of that guy's name, Art Bell, because I couldn't. I was like, Art something.
Yeah, Alex Jones' conspiracies are about people and they're a lot more destructive. Art Bell's is about aliens and they're funny.
Did anybody listen to that clip of Art Bell where somebody called in claiming to be an employee from Area 51?
Oh, yeah, that's classic. That's where we get, like, so much stuff about the secret underbases and, like, whatever. I
need to listen to that one for some UFO stuff I'm working on.
Check out Matt's website, check out his books.
You'll learn that they're not aliens, they're interdimensional beings who've been lying about who they claim they to be.
Ah, so the ultra-terrestrial hypothesis.
Sure, why not?
Yeah.
It's only topical because of who Dougie Doug is. Anyway, so what we have here is Dougie Doug is talking about, you know, that there's, like, reptilians and government gobbles. Like, this is really the Alex Jones stuff, right? Like,
all right, folks, there's a race of alien spiders out there. They're the alien spiders that made my wife leave me, okay? They made me eat that big bowl of chili that made me forget my children. This is why I fall asleep hugging a pillow a little too much these days, folks. It's the damn spiders!
And they want to probe my butt!
Your impression is getting really good. Also,
what about mine? Because that was the first time I gave it a try.
Good dry run.
You just need to sound more desperate and angry, and like you're pretending to still be 44, even though you've been on the air for 30 years. But yeah, out on the edge of town in this trailer, we zoom out, and he's talking about the government, blah, 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 stealing our jobs and stealing our land and FEMA death camps and whatever, whatever else.
False flags, gay frogs.
And his butt. A lot.
He does talk about his butt and getting probed, whatever.
He does bring up an interesting question. Why don't they ever go through the front?
Maybe their machine is too big.
So, we have... We then cut to a truck who's listening to if he dumps some radioactive plot device into the local water supply.
I figured that the whole radioactive makes things big trope would have been dead by now, but no.
Well, they are a little more creative with it. Instead of directly mutating things, it mutates the things they eat. Like when the poison goes up the food chain.
Like, this must have been, like, when mercury was, like, in shrimp and tuna and, like, everyone is panicked. It's 2002, guys. Mm. Oh, also, did I mention this? This movie was, like... This movie was cursed. Did you hear this? Okay.
The movie is
dedicated to three separate people. One, Louis Arquette, the father of David Arquette, died during production. The other two were Don Devlin and Pilar Surratt, the producer's parents, who both died of lung cancer during production of this movie.
They're smoking all the radioactive waste that makes the frogs gay.
My son is in a giant spider movie. I'd rather die than watch that.
I mean, if that was the case, he would have died after Godzilla. He made that too.
Oh, gross. And Arquette was in WCW Heavy.
Well, here was the environment when this movie came out, because I saw this on the Tribune, but I also remember when this was a thing. The movie was not supposed to be called Eight-Legged Freaks. It was supposed to be called Iraq Attack, as an arachnid. Yeah. Better title. The reason they didn't go with it was because this got released right as the Iraq invasion of 2003 was building up.
We could have said it in Iraq.
Yeah, people would really confuse the two.
Hollywood executives think everyone's an idiot anyway.
We've kind of proven them correct many times.
But I will say, the other thing that they should have done is just pocket this movie. Spend another 6 months and fix the effects, because it looks rough.
Or just release it.
Rough is an understatement.
They should have gone lower. I mean, it's already a B-movie. Why try and pretend it's otherwise? Make it cheap as hell.
Use practical effects.
Yeah.
More of just spider legs being left out of polyurethane.
Yeah, it reminded me a lot of Gremlins, but Gremlins is made 20 years earlier with puppets, and they're better looking than these bad video game thing.
Oh, so CGI in this movie is probably the worst CGI I've seen since Spawn.
Well, and the funny thing...
You're never going to let me forget that, are you?
No.
Well, he didn't blame you specifically this time, but now that you brought it up, it's your fault.
Punish me!
Oh, gross. But the other thing that's funny about it to me is some of the spiders, like the big hairy tarantula thing, is actually pretty well rendered, and then it's surrounded by less well rendered spiders.
Oh, yeah.
It's actually very distracting that, like, there's different graphics engines that work on different things.
Any of y'all remember Lost in Space?
I try not to, but
well,
I did.
Now you do.
Yeah.
We did it for this very show.
We did. It was like the 13th or 14th episode, I think.
Yeah.
M suggested
and all those crappy spider things and spider Gary, what's his name?
Old Man.
Gary Oldman. I almost called him Gary Coleman.
Is it really a sir?
No, of course not.
Oscar winner Gary Oldman.
Yeah, that doesn't mean anything.
But he was replaced by Gary Youngman. Larry Youngman.
Yeah, so
just him without a mustache.
I mean, so many badly CGI spiders everywhere.
Yeah, that's kind of the 2000s. I don't know why they thought spiders would be easy. I mean, at least Pixar did it right. Just like, we could make plastic-looking things. Let's just make a movie based on plastic-looking things.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we show up at Tom Noonan's house, and Matt was right. He's the creepiest man in this movie, and we deal with giant, greasy spiders.
And that's before Tom Noonan starts showing off his vivariums.
Oh my god, and he grabs the child by the face, and you're just like,
Yeah, they kind of deconstruct the innocent child befriends misunderstood eccentric. Like, his mom, the sheriff, didn't want him hang out with him either.
Her mom does not think he's Doc Brown. His mom thinks he's a pedophile, and it's kind of clear.
I mean, you don't get Tom Noonan if you don't want to go creepy.
And he's got a parrot that says, "I see dead people."
He loves that movie.
Oh, that was such a terrible joke.
Yeah, that was bad.
That is
foreshadowing.
Well, no, it's really just a terrible reference to another movie.
There are a lot of... I mean, obviously, this is them.
This is them. This is Dawn of the Dead. This is Alien. This is Gremlins. This is Arachnophobia shoved into a blender, and they served us the result.
And I was trying to think, was the
and I want my money back and a free cookie.
Them? The 50s?
Yes, it okay, is. Yeah, they walked by them on the TV.
Yeah.
So... Yeah, he says that there's, for some reason, the crickets keep making the spiders bigger. It's like crack for spiders, and then he licks the kid, I guess, and then the kid leaves. And we notice that the cage, one of the cages is open, one of the tarantulas gets out, it's on the back of his neck.
Yep.
And then the next thing we know, there are thousands of spiders on the wall because no one told anyone what was happening in this scene.
Because apparently toxic waste makes spiders into social carnivores like ants.
Well, no, but my point was, one spider escapes. And then the second Tom Noonan gets bitten, which is not how this works, but whatever. Let's say for a second it is. He turns around, and there's millions of spiders.
I thought he was thrashing around, knocking all the cages open.
They don't appear on the ceiling, then. It's like they just teleport everywhere.
Yeah.
And the reason I bring it up is the CGI is so bad, they look like flying toasters in the background of a screensaver. So it's like they move backwards and forwards. There's just hundreds of them.
Are they brave little toasters?
Ugh, gross.
God damn it, Matt.
Anyway. And then at this point, the horror movie starts. That's just kind of it. Like, there's not a lot to this, except there's a Scooby-Doo C-plot that's happening, where the mayor's on the phone with, like, a vague yet menacing government agency, and he's like, "You want to buy the town for how much?"
That didn't go anywhere.
No! Like I said, it's a Scooby-Doo plot! Like,
we're gonna be storing toxic waste in the mine under my property.
Yeah, pretty much.
Wasn't that a Simpsons episode at one point?
It was, and Mr. Burns...
Isn't that the...
It's the monorail.
Ah. I thought it was, that was one where Homer becomes the mayor and he turns the town into a giant dump site.
The That's sanitation the garbage. Commission.
Yeah, and then where he has a music... the garbage man can.
Yeah.
It's Steve Martin, I think, is the other
Indeed.
Guy.
Yeah, I agree. The movie didn't really get started until the great Vivarium massacre.
But I disagree. I think the movie got started when Scarlett Johansson first showed up. I'm just saying, as a... 14-year-old, almost 15-year-old at the time, that was a very important moment in my life.
He became a man that day.
I don't want to think about Daniel becoming a man.
We had a ceremony and everything.
Scojo was also
She's older than me. She had to be. She was had to be in her early 20s, but the character that she was playing was younger.
Yeah, she's an old. She's an, a year, almost a year older than I am.
Okay.
Yeah. So,
what have you done with your life?
17. Oh, I know. In AP World, I was talking about Alexander the Great like a week ago, and I was just like, at 33, he had conquered the known world and drank himself to death. So, well, you know, I got something to look forward to.
You're about halfway there, Nick.
Yeah. Right. Today we were talking about Rome, and I was like, well, at least Julius Caesar's older than me. There's still time to be stabbed to death by my friends.
He's on to us, everyone. He's on to us. Damn it, I put my toga and my butcher knife away now.
There we go. Anyway, Leon Rippey plays Wade, the greasy mayor, who's related to someone in town who's supposed to be dating Scarlett Johansson.
I think Brett is supposed to be his stepson.
I
guess. Yeah, they never established that.
Well, he lives with him and doesn't call him dad. He calls him by his actual name.
All I know about this character is he gets tased in the dick and pees himself. That's his character arc right there.
She's the most, like, her and the sheriff are, like, the only developed characters, and they're both kind of badasses. I do like how she has a gun case filled with shotguns that are loaded, and can't find the key in time, so she just punches through the glass. It's like, why even bother, man? From this point, the spiders start to escape, and it becomes like Tremors. You know, it's a big open. You know, it's a big open field. We don't see exactly what's taking these people out, but it starts with I think Wade's
ostriches.
Farm ostriches.
The ostrich farm. Yeah,
they start taking his ostriches out one by one.
Frank Welker has 75 credits in this because he voiced all the spiders.
Oh yeah, they kind of gibber a little bit.
The spiders talk, man.
How are they making those noises?
They don't, buddy. We did Armageddon, and the goddamn comet talks.
Okay.
It roars at him. Like, you know what? Spiders can talk. Although the one on top of the mall sign that's gesturing to the rest going, is a little much.
Yeah, that's maybe where I was getting the Gremlins vibe. The monsters invading the town, and they kind of communicate with each other.
It's also the little girl in Poltergeist. It's kind of like the they're here. Like, because they're just everywhere. Like, again, it feels like, I don't know who this director is. Like, he directed what?
Nothing.
Mild pornography.
He directed two straight to TV sequels of Return of the Living Dead.
I mean, I don't know why. Oh, here we go. He received a critical acclaim at 1998's Telluride Film Festival with Larger Than Life, and then caught the eyes of Dean Devlin and Roland Emmerich, who recruited him to do Eight Legged Good Freaks, and then it was a disaster, so they never worked again. There you go. He also directed the sequel to Without a Paddle.
Oh! There was a sequel to that?
It sure was, called Nature's Calling. I wonder what oh, gross. Oh, it's all, it even looks worse. Ew.
Oh, man.
2009. It was made, all of his box office was in DVD rentals.
Oh, and currently on the Tribune, there is no trivia whatsoever for the sequel to Without a Paddle.
Oh, gross. Okay, so, that being said, let's get back to Elroy Elkium's Elkhaim, maybe? Masterpiece. What do you want to talk about? Like, this movie is just a monster movie where things...
Well, suddenly the spiders get bigger, and there's that whole subplot where it's either David Arquette or the kid finds a little piece of a spider's leg, so he's like, oh my god, the spiders are gigantic and are going to kill us all, and nobody believes him.
It's the kid, because when David Arquette finds the bigger limb after the spider kidnaps his secretary or landlady or whatever the precise
mother. I never really explained that relationship either.
Mm-hmm. I think she's supposed to be Brett's aunt or something, but, I mean, it's a small town. Everyone's probably related to somebody somehow.
Yeah.
Ew.
And
this kid...
Yeah, so he basically finds a bigger spider leg and he takes it back to... the sheriff's house, and then she believes her son isn't engaging in paranoid media nightmares, whatever she calls them.
Oh, there's also that subplot of him coming back to town to try and reopen the mines because he's convinced there's gold in them there hills.
Which the spiders find, if you remember correctly. Yes.
Well, it's in the alien cocoon scene right at the tail end, where that's where they're cocooning all the victims for the mother spider.
Which you only see for like 5 minutes.
Because they couldn't afford any more, man.
Like, yeah, they build up the whole plot about the male orb weaver spiders impressing the female orb weaver spiders by bringing them live prey. And you only see the female orb weaver spider for like 5 minutes.
It's kind of like what happened with Snakes on a Plane, which I also saw back in the day, where in order to pretend like it was a lot smarter than it was, it actually went through, it's like, oh, this snake has this Latin name, and this is how you counteract its venom, or, oh, this snake, this is how it strikes at its prey. They do the same thing with the spiders, and like, show, oh, this is a jumping spider, so they can foreshadow later with those scenes, or the burrowing spiders and all that, and it's also pointless.
Well, and the kid is Mike, and he does that. He, like, he goes, babada babada, he's like, jumpium latunium spiderum, and he's like, the jumper, and you're just like, oh my god.
That's some great Wile E. Coyote naming right there, I commend you.
Yeah, right?
So give the chance to have the sister complain about how much of a nerd he is.
Well, and I mean, and that's really what it is. Like, he's the nerd who knows everything. People don't want to believe him, but he turns out to be right, and only David Arquette believes him at first, and then blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, this was a precocious kid movie. We could have included it in the Precocious Kids Month.
We kind of... I will say, though, this kid is the only one who made it out of this. He goes right from this to being young Matt Murdock in Daredevil in 2003, and he's the friend in Dickie Roberts' former child star.
I think there's at least one other person in this movie that maybe reached some loftier career goals after this.
Tom Noonan?
Yes, Tom Noonan.
After this?
The CGI company that ended up making Raid commercials for the rest of their careers.
Also, that movie, that stop motion movie where he voiced all the characters except the two.
Yeah.
Anomalisa. Which is a great movie.
Has David Arquette done anything interesting?
He got divorced.
Scream 4?
Well, besides that.
I was going to say Courtney Cox, but you.
All right. Until 2013, it was Courtney Cox.
Yeah, I was going to say it was anything other than being Courtney Cox's husband. I guess that anymore.
He joined the WCW for a while and made a run for the belt, I think.
He did?
He did.
How many steroids did he have to take? Because he's pretty stringy.
I mean, it is fake, you know.
Yeah, we still have to at least look ripped.
In addition to his acting career, Arquette took a brief foray into professional wrestling in the early 2000s, competing for the WCW. During his tenure, primarily to promote his upcoming film Ready to Rumble, Arquette became one-time WCW World Heavyweight Champion, an angle that has cited as the pivotal to the demise of the WCW. I just want to be the guy that whatever you touch destroys it. Like, he appeared on Friends and then they announced that it was going to be their last season, so... anyway. So...
How again do the spiders, like, actually emerge and everybody starts believing it? It's like a meeting with the mayor saying everything's well or something?
Well, effectively what happens is there's it's almost structured like an episode of The Simpsons. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a town meeting that says, everything's gonna be fine, we're just gonna sell our land to the government for no reason. And he goes, is this another get-rich-quick scheme like your mall and your emu farm or whatever, your ostrich farm?
And he's still defending all of them. Like, well, I thought there was going to be an interstate coming through here, and ostrich is low fat and high protein.
I mean, and like, that essentially sets up the whole rest of the movie, which is that we're going to see an ostrich farm, we're going to see the biker kids being pricks, and all of them get eaten by spiders.
Oh, that's what it was. All the biker kids are trying to flee the spiders, and only ScarJo's asshole boyfriend escapes.
I think his name is Brett.
Brett.
I like, don't care. All assholes.
I do not care.
It could have been Chad.
Or Seth.
I mean, this movie is also stinks of the 90s. The soundtrack, the extreme sports for no reason, the rapping granny, like...
Hey, where's the rapping granny?
Oh, I'm just referring to the old woman who's like the...
In Wedding Singer?
No. I mean, literally the old woman in this that knows David Arquette.
Oh, Gladys.
But like...
Oh, man.
But yeah, anyway. So from here, we have a... What? I mean, this is just when people start dying. Like, the spiders end up out in the dunes.
At first, they start crawling into people's drywall and, like, stealing cats through it, which, in 2002, that was actually a pretty good scene because, you know, the cats getting smashed against the walls and you see the
engine. Yeah, that was definitely the best scene of the movie.
Well, nowadays, it just looks like a cartoon because the CGI is that bad.
Well, like, the one I was thinking that, like, starts like a Tom Savini scene is the one where the guys in the mine spraying down the thing with water, and then you see the lump moving through the spider, like through the hose. Oh, and yeah. He's like, what's going on here? And the spiders go into his mouth and come out. I'm like, if there had been a practical effect there, that's a that truly been, wonderful scene. But then he just starts spitting out like doom sprites. And that's, at that point, you realize what the movie's going
to do. So he's a cacodemon spitting out the lost souls at you?
Exactly.
Sure.
I mean, but like, that's the point. Had there been anything... That's where it needed to be until the end, right? When methane magically smells like something and, you know, and then there's an explosion or whatever. But, like, you just need something. And there's not even that Jaws scene where there's, like, secret horror. It's all, like, immediate, well, this is clearly what it is. And that scene with the rapist is really awkward. Like, with Tom Noonan's character, where he just is screaming that he's covered with stuff, and they try to call him later, and everything's covered in webs, and there's never tension.
Yeah.
Anyway. I mean, we've already been talking over almost half an hour now, so we can kind of get to just how it ends. I mean, unless there's something you want to talk about.
Let's talk about the mall scene, because it's like pretty much the script said, okay, you remember Dawn of the Dead? We're going to do that.
We're going to do a Dawn of the Dead now. I mean, because the rest of the deaths are kind of... nothing. Like,
well, it's just the spider jumps on people and then that's it.
There's an old man watching TV and there's a spider behind his chair and his friend watches him. And
oh yeah, like, in that's another thing this rips off. It was like the grainy scene in Mars Attacks with that giant cannon.
Yeah,
his oddly enthusiastic barber friend who, in when David Arquette is having his mustache shave, he's like, you know, don't get out of the chair. They try to hold him down while he shaves him.
Well, that's just how David Arquette always gets a haircut.
He's like a child. He's like a toddler. Like, I don't like it, my haircut.
Or a cat.
There you go.
There you go.
And then, like you said, like we mentioned earlier, there's a kind of chase scene through the desert where people start getting kicked off of their scooters and stuff, or their motorbikes, like their crotch rockets. Now, what I will say, that must have been a hell of a thing to see without the CGI. I would have loved to see what it looks like, because what it was probably is someone wearing a harness and then riding at full speed, just randomly getting yanked off bikes. Because the spiders actually there, that's all that's happening.
That would have been cool.
I mean, because I imagine the rest of it is just someone has like like a gun that shoots tennis balls, and then when you get hit with the tennis ball, you're supposed to jump back. But when you're on a motorcycle or whatever, you're just getting thrown off a moving vehicle.
Well, that's what stunt doubles are for. They're expendable.
That's what I mean. Like, that would have been great to see, though. Like, I mean, we have Wolverine, where it's just Hugh Jackman giggling while, well, I forget who the stunt double is, but the guy who's supposed to be Deadpool is jumping around in a horrible CGI-free movie. I'd rather see something like this, where something's actually kind of happening. Anyway, that's just me having a moment.
A senior moment? I mean, it was your birthday.
I'm like a year and a half younger than you, aren't I?
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. So...
I've annoyed people so many times today, they're throwing things at me. This is a milestone.
No other deaths you want to tell? I mean, like, we get to see ScarJo in a towel for a second, cause, and then the spider starts to attack her.
Right, and then there, Wade dies at some point, doesn't he?
Wade doesn't actually die.
Yeah, he's captured, just like the old lady is captured and taken away, but they're wrapped up into
the gold area of the mine.
They gather all the villagers with their crossbows and shotguns and a chainsaw at one point.
This is literally the mall scene.
Yeah.
I just wish we had a boomstick. Like, instead of David Arquette, it's a better movie with Bruce.
Ooh, what if he was Wade? Talking about the ostrich farm.
Oh my god, yeah, make him crotchety and old, and he's the mayor. Like, age him up a little. Bubba Hotep era Bruce?
Yeah.
Oh my god, that's a much better movie.
Or he could have him instead of David Arquette.
No, he wouldn't be the right age.
Well, I mean, that was my first thought, Matt, honestly. It is 2002. This is pre-Briscoe County Jr.
No, this was post-Briscoe County by like 10 years.
Yeah, I remember
this
that being
This is pre-Burn Notice.
This is pre-Burn Notice. It's the same year as Bubba Hotep.
That's such a great movie. Bubba Hotep is fun. ScarJo is fine. The kid is fine.
Nobody who you would really expect to die and have it be meaningful ends up dying.
Yeah, that's weird. I mean, this is a painfully PG-13 movie. You bringing up snakes on a plane made me wish there was a little bit more gore or nudity or anything. Not that I just want to see naked people, but it raises the stakes.
Well, you do just want to see naked people.
I mean, of course, but like...
did Pornhub come out? Right. I think this is before that.
You know what? You're right. We needed to see pornography in our horror movies. Yes. Otherwise, why watch? I mean, Jason Voorhees, that's essentially what you're watching it for. And then there's a knife. I get really weird sexual things about knives now.
There's probably a fetish for that.
Sure is. Sure is. Anyway, but yeah, like, the end scene is at that mall that they're kind of barricaded inside. The mother spider comes up, or a large spider, acting like a tank, comes up to tear a hole in it, and then they're... like fleeing through these waves to underneath to the caves for a final standoff.
I do like David Arquette in these scenes because he's just gone completely off the rails and he's committed to overacting as much as possible. And that's where we get the title of this movie.
Eight-Legged Freaks. And they say Iraq Attack like 7 times. And every time they say it, I think, better title.
I'm wondering if Eight-Legged Freaks was ad-libbed because it looks kind of wedged in there just screaming at him, you know, back off, you eight-legged freaks. And he doesn't
He doesn't say back off, you eight-legged freaks. It's back off, you eight-legged freaks!
And he has not shown that much energy throughout the rest of the movie.
I know, it was listed in the divorce proceedings.
Yeah, I'm wondering if it's like Snakes on a Plane, we actually filmed it later.
The story goes it was improvised, and when they couldn't use Iraq Attack, they just chose it for the title.
Yeah, so, pretty much.
I mean, who knows? It's IMDb. Like, I could technically say anything I wanted about this movie. It was supposed to be a sequel to The Erotic Awakening of Hercules. Like, and then scripts took it. It's like
Troy McClure as Wade.
It's like the James Woods scene from The Simpsons where he starts out being racist, but then it's... sorry, just James Woods humor.
I used to love James Woods, man. What happened to you?
Well, it was at the scene where he was at the Quickie Mart. He goes, how did I go from being an uptight Quickie Mart clerk to being an Eskimo attorney? And he goes, Oh, that makes sense. Like, that's what it is. James Woods is kind of great. Videodrome? Which Cronenberg was he in?
He was in Videodrome.
Yeah, okay.
Once Upon a Time in America he was great in.
Salvador.
Salvador.
The Erotic Awakening of Hercules. I already mentioned that one.
Yes, that one.
But yeah, then I mean, then it's just kind of a standard fight scene. Like the townsfolks are trying to figure out what's going on. They can't light a match because magically Arquette smells methane, which I don't think you can do.
Yeah, that's why they always add something to the stove gas.
Yeah, exactly. And so he's like, I smell gas. And I don't know, I guess it's a fart joke then. But one way or another, they start discovering that these people are alive. They're just showing off for the queen, who literally looks like a Turok villain. Like, I don't know how to describe it, but like we see like a saucy leg left into frame, then it drags away. And then all of a sudden we see this giant spider that's on screen for 4 seconds before they CGI fire the hell out of her, and then that's the end of the movie. Right?
They do show you really can't outrun the fireball, because the fireball does engulf them a couple times. It doesn't really burn them.
So it doesn't really engulf them then.
Yeah, well, I mean, but
no, not long enough.
To your point, I agree, Matt. They were this close to making something dramatic. They just don't stick with it long enough. Like, what you need to do is cut to the outside of the mine. Everyone else is outside. There's a burst of flame, and then they come out on the motorbike, just shooting out ahead of the spiders. But, like, at this point, it looks like a shitty liquid metal effect knockoff. As the fire engulfs the spiders, they just kind of scream and half melt and then disappear into nothing. They're just this, for a movie that, again, cost $30 million in 2002, I have no idea where the money went.
Probably David Arquette, Carrie Warren. Was Scarlett Johansson a thing at this point? Because
no.
She's so young. Because
Carrie Worst wasn't a thing at the time.
But, well, she was a bunch of stuff before that. So, I mean, it's like a Sci-Fi Channel original movie with more well-known actors.
Scarlett Johansson had been in a bunch of stuff before this, too. She was in Home Alone 3, but, I mean, I don't think they were going to spend the money on her.
Yeah, I think they spent money on crappy CGI, and then they started running out of money. That's why the CGI goes down in quality, depending on what spider has been rendered. Because I bet what happened is they showed it for test audiences. They weren't impressed because there weren't enough spiders, and so they had to go back with like an extra $1 million and add more spiders. And since I saw this movie advertised everywhere, I imagine it lost money hand over fist. Because even if you make $5 million of profit, that's all swallowed up by the advertising. And that's not doesn't count in the box office. Like, in Box Office Mojo, they don't tell you that. But, like, I think you're right.
I just figured that with a box to make profit, you had to double everything.
Right, and this didn't come close. That being said, Arquette was probably the most expensive part, because by this point he had been in everything he was good in. Buffy, Airheads, Never Been Kissed, Beverly Hills 90210, Friends, Blossom. Yeah, he'd been in everything.
Oh, didn't even mention the Scream movies.
It's here. Where he met his future wife, Courtney Cox. They married in 1999. And then he did an advertisement for Coke.
Good for him.
And it was all coming up Milhouse for David Arquette.
He produced a number of TV shows called Daisy Does America.
Oh my.
Phrasing. Are we not doing phrasing?
For TBS.
Oh, well, never mind that.
And he started along Cougar Town with Courtney Cox in 2012. They got divorced in 2013.
14 years. That's pretty long for Hollywood.
Gross. He was in Hamlet, too. I like that movie.
That was pretty good.
Shall we wrap this one up, gentlemen?
Why not?
Anything else you want to talk about? Like,
well, let's talk about the actual ending with Dougie Jones sort of recapping the entire plot.
Please.
Where he was trying to like get back on his radio show and talk about how this is how we defeated the alien spiders, which aren't just spiders, they're alien spiders. I believe somebody actually uses the phrase, there's fighters from Mars at some points, which is really,
I think David Arquette had to convince him that they were actually aliens in order to get him to let him use their radio.
Okay, something like that. But anyway, he then talks about, well now, as far as David Arquette finding the gold in the mine and putting everybody back to work, that's another story. And then he smiles and he's got three random gold teeth, which, why?
Because they found the gold in the mine.
Yes, but also random racism, kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, not that I have answers for you. I mean, I'm not going to pretend I have answers for you. But, yeah, I don't know. I kind of want to just... I wish there was a DVD commentary extra of just an hour of Dougie Doug's show. Just him talking about it, like, as though, like, he just improvised a whole bunch of it and they only used, like, 6 seconds of it, but, like...
Oh, that would be great. Geez,
if they had Patreon or Kickstarter back then, that's what you get for the certain level of sponsorship, you know, the extra hour of UFO ranting.
I mean, I do love me some Art Bell, like, but... That famous recording, if I can find the one you're talking about, I think I know which one you're talking about.
It's pretty easy to find.
I'll put it on the Facebook page because it's actually great. Like,
they're not what they claim to be, Art. They're not.
I mean, east of the Mississippi, you're on the air with Art Bell on AM Coast to Coast, right? and the guy is like he claims he used to be a truck driver for Area 51 or something like that.
Something like that. And
he's afraid they're coming to kill him. And it's actually a hell of a piece of audio.
He's on the verge of tears throughout the entire thing.
And you can tell Art doesn't believe him at first.
Yeah.
Because he's like... sure. Now tell me about these aliens. Like, I can't do a good Art Bell, but
for a second, you sound like Morty.
I don't know, Rick. They're aliens, but they're not what they say they are.
That's
what he sounded like.
He's not far. I mean, Daniel's better at voices than I am nowadays, but.
That 3,000 Miles of Graceland is pretty good.
Anyway, we should wrap this up. We'll come to you last, Matt, because it was your suggestion. Jeremy, what do you think?
Starts out as like a loving homage to all the B-movie stuffs, but by the end it just runs out of steam, and this probably would have been better as just a short movie.
Well, that's fair. Daniel?
I've already forgotten so much about this movie since I saw it over the weekend, because it's just that sort of movie. It's disposable. I mean, it's not terrible. If you're bored on a Sunday afternoon and want to try and forget your problems before you have to go back to work the next day, it's a perfectly fine way to kill some time, but there's just no substance to it, and it's trying so hard to be like a spoof of old B-movies, but at the end of the day, it just falls into many of the same traps they do, and it's just kind of dumb.
Yeah.
It's basically a Sci-Fi Channel original movie with somewhat better acting. It's not that good. It's not so bad. It's funny. It's just blah. And, I mean, it was a B-movie. You get a B-movie vibe because of the script and the tone. You didn't need... They could have at least tried to have better special effects because they sucked. Yeah. So, meh.
Yeah, like, for me, it's just... It sucks because... They didn't commit to anything, right? Like, you know, they do the horror movie tropes of, like, the jackass who essentially, like, grabs Skojo, gets tased, and then he's one of the first ones attacked. Like, you know, it's like a Michael Myers movie. Like, the horny teenager's the first one to die. It turns out he didn't die. Turns out that there's not really even any horny teenagers. Like, there's no nudity, they don't commit to anything.
Yeah, the least horny teenagers are the ones who die.
Yeah, I mean, and it's not even like, there's no real blood, there's not really, people just get kind of knocked down.
There's spider blood after they chainsaw their legs off.
And you have the dopey comic relief. Actually, ironically enough, it's the character that David Arquette plays in Scream. Like, the doofy cop is like, oh no, he shoots up through the roof and spider goo drips on him, because he like shoots through a spider. It's all so stupid. And the thing is, if they had cut the budget and like Jeremy said, and it was more practical effects, it would have been such a more fun film. Like, they owe up to the cheese so much better. Like, the only times that I genuinely got a laugh was like the mayor at one point is eating at the food court at the abandoned mall, and like he goes, this was delicious, whatever, Susie. Awful light night tonight, isn't it? And she goes, are you kidding me? This place is always a bit, like, because all the mayor does the whole movie is eat shit.
Yeah.
Which is a good joke.
Hey, he does have a if you build it, they will come joke.
Which wasn't funny.
But at least it's something. Like, for a movie that has nothing, at least that's something. I don't know, like, Matt brought up a lot of the good points that I kind of enjoyed about this movie. The problem is there's just so little to hold this together. It's almost like it's a movie you put on and then clean the house, and then whenever a spider kill comes, the music changes, everything shifts, so you can go walk back in the room, watch the spider shit, and then walk back away. Anyway, we're out of time. We're good, thanks. This is our second movie in our monsterish movie month. The next movie is, I believe, Matt's pick for this month. It's a dark one, Deep Rising.
with Treat Williams dropping some awesome pun bombs.
Yeah.
Oh, I've never seen that.
From the director of The Mummy.
From the director of The Mummy.
Yes.
It's a movie that I have not seen, but realize I caught bits and pieces of on Sci-Fi when I was looking it up. But that, of course, is the, you know, TV version. So I'm interested to actually see the honest-to-God monster movie version. This was Tom's pick, but whatever. I guess he doesn't exist.
Let us mourn him.
Yeah. So tune in every mournful week. Oh, and if you think we're missing a movie that should have been on this list, go to the Facebook page and vote. Come next, I think we decided on March. Do you remember? March?
I think March.
We're going to do a selection of the movies that you guys chose that said we should have done, but we didn't do. So tune in next week and every future week as we put another piece of your past on trial. Thanks, guys.
Myopia Defend Your Childhood is hosted by Nick Hoffman, edited by Candace Burns, and executive produced by Nick Hoffman and Candace Burns. It is produced by Daniel Suttis, Matthew Quinn, and Thomas Herman. We are a proud member of the ESO Network and a product of Dude Letter Podcasting. Our theme is Surf Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod. Find it at incomptech.com. It is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution 3 license. And thanks. Watch the spider out. Out
came the sun. This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.